It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Welcome back. The Chiefs have pulled out another tough win on the road, 27-20 over the Vikings. You are here. 41 is the Mic. I am Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest, and joining me, my co-host, NFL enthusiast, Nick Jacobs from KSHB 41. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm good. I like that you have a rotation for what I'm enthusiastic about this week. But we keep that cycle going. That's the way people are actually going to learn about me, is what am I enthusiastic about this week?
I really need to make, I need to just come up with a new one every single week, because you are an enthusiast on many different topics.
There, and many different things, not just topics, like food, movies, TV shows, you name it. I mean, you know, I can got a lot of passion in my head and my heart.
We do have a lot of passions, and thankfully we have a lot of passionate Chiefs fans listening to us. So that's what we're excited about. We appreciate you all joining us to break down this win. This one, I don't know if anybody thought it would be a cakewalk. I know I didn't think that this would be a cakewalk. Maybe I certainly thought it would be a little bit more higher scoring than it was. Both defenses came to play, but despite the Vikings are struggling, I mean, they fall to 1-4 on the season. This is a playoff caliber team, and that was a playoff caliber environment today, Nick.
Yeah, I never thought that the Viking, you know, I didn't think this was going to be a runaway game where the Chiefs could dominate them like a Chicago Bears style of team. Because when you actually watch the Minnesota Vikings tape, they are a playoff caliber team. It's just they make some mistakes. The defense is very aggressive, like a Baltimore Ravens, Wink Martindale style of defense. But Flores is very aggressive in that. He likes to complicate things. He quarterbacks a lot of looks. There's only one quarterback that's gone over 300 yards against him this year, is Justin Herbert from the Chargers, who had very reliable receivers in that game. And I believe he still had Austin Eckler before the ankle injury. So he had a lot of weapons of firepower that the Vikings weren't going to be able to take away. But what I'm kind of getting at, for the most part, is that the Chiefs were going to have an uphill battle as an offense to really be able to kind of run away with it against this caliber of a Vikings football team. And then on the flip side, on the offensive side of the ball, the Vikings have a serious skill set with KJ Osborne, with Justin Jefferson, and then also with Jordan Addison. They have that Bengals style of three combination, and then you throw in a top eight tight end like TJ Hockenson. Like, that's a very dangerous group. And then I see why they added Akers to the mix, because he gives them that quick speed back to go with the power back that Madison's able to be. So collectively, at the skill set spot, the Vikings have a lot of similarities to what the Bills have skill set wise, and you know, and what the Bengals have skill set wise, and not the same speed as the Dolphins, but in the ballpark. So I mean, all that combined, like that. This was a good test to kind of give people answers at where the Chiefs are versus some of the other teams that fans may be keeping an eye on.
And on top of that, I mean, just a really good performance from the Vikings. They did not make the mistakes today that they have made in the first few weeks of the season that really cost them. I mean, they had the opening turnover that really, I mean, put that on Justin Reed. I mean, he made the play to force that turnover. It wasn't like the Vikings gave that ball away. And after that, they protected the football, which was the one thing that had really been, they'd been struggling with this year, but Chiefs still overcome that.
I was surprised at how few turnovers that the Vikings had, because Kirk Cousins had a couple interceptions in the past handful of weeks, or a ball get punched out when Hockenson would be going over the middle, and just those little nuanced things that kind of, would put the game out of reach or kind of turn it in favor of the Vikings opponent. So, yeah, I mean, collectively, like, the Vikings, they took care of the football, like you said. They, you know, they only had that one that was kind of, like you said, a really well-placed shoulder into the tight end, Oliver. So, I mean, collectively, look, I thought the Chiefs had a better defensive performance, and I think some other people are going to probably feel like they did. But I think people are underestimating the caliber of what the Vikings were.
Because, of this team, and I think that the level the Vikings played, I mean, to me, this might be the the best measuring stick that we've really had for this team thus far, especially for some of the challenges that they're going to be facing in the AFC later this season, like you mentioned. So let's go through that and just kind of break it down, you know, what we kind of learned about this team today. And let's start on the offensive side, because obviously the Chiefs were moved the ball pretty efficiently and opportunistically. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the greatest show on turf that the Chiefs can sometimes be. But Mahomes, 31 of 41 for 281. As I like to say, he ate his vegetables today. There wasn't a lot of steak. I mean, he took a couple of shots downfield, but for the most part, this was about getting the ball out quickly and distributing the ball and just really being, I never want to call Patrick Mahomes a game manager, but this was a get the ball out, get it out quick, and get it to his playmakers kind of game.
Yeah, this is a keep yourself upright at all costs game. So anything they could do, because I mean, one of those shots that he took down to Justin Watson down the field there, he knew he's going to have to lean back on it a little bit, and he's going to have to drift a little bit. He had McKinnon come up and get that blitz quicker to buy himself a little bit of time. So you could tell Pat knew it was coming, and hey, I could tell with where he placed McKinnon. Like, all right, he's going to take a deep shot here, and so he was able to do that, and it worked out for him. And then it was funny because if I remember, it was that one or another one. Daniel Hunter made sure to hold Patrick Mahomes up. Like, he was on the other side of him, and I think Harrison Smith may have been the one who pushed him. One of the DBs pushed him, and he was going to tumble down, and, like, Daniel Hunter, like, went under and grabbed him and kept him lift up and gently made sure he went to the ground instead of violently or forcefully, because he didn't want that roughing the passer, because he knew what it'd mean for them. And after that explosive play to Watson, that would have attacked on another 15, and you know, the Vikings, at that time, the game was still within reach, so... Yeah, with that, I thought the Vikings gave the Chiefs offense a lot of good looks, a lot of things that they really had to digest as an offensive line and as a team overall. And I think the Chiefs, like you said, they had a lot of answers for how to get the ball out quick, how to work over the middle, maybe take some flats. And I thought it was just Mahomes had you could tell he's focused, locked in, and had better decision-making skills and was willing to take what the defense was giving him this time around.
Are there, for you, are there any concerns? I'm going through, and I mean, the hits weren't necessarily a huge number. I mean, that's actually a pretty good number for the Chiefs. You know, the Vikings did get a sack, which Chiefs have only given up 4 of those this year, and I'm counting, I believe, 9 quarterback hits on the day, and there were a couple of good little shots, and obviously Mahomes looked like he got tangled up there at one point, and his ankle was twisted a little bit. Any concerns for you on the offensive line that the pressure that maybe the production today wasn't as tight as maybe we've seen for the first 4 weeks?
From a run game perspective, I was hoping to see. I liked what I saw early on with the intensity in the offensive line. I thought they did a really good job pushing the line of scrimmage, helping push their running backs forward if they needed to, or helping clean some stuff up on a pile to kind of help them get a couple extra yards here and there. So I thought the offensive line was trying to set the tempo and kind of dictate things early and try to establish that. And I thought the Chiefs were able to kind of establish a little bit of who they were and their identity. As the blitzes came along, I think there was a couple times where they obviously had hiccups and they couldn't protect every, you know, they weren't going to be able to pick everybody up to protect Mahomes. So they had to kind of pick and choose in some spots, and they had to leave the running back in a couple times when they probably would have preferred having McKinnon or somebody else out in the flats to kind of help make some plays overall. But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, where I'm more intrigued is going to be on Thursday after a physical game like that, like it was against the Vikings, hard hitting, very physical style. What's that line on both sides of the ball going to look like with less than 3 days, you know, three and a half days of rest from the game that they just played?
And when you mentioned the running game, you know, I come back to first half, the Chiefs, well, let's say Pacheco and McKinnon ran the ball fairly efficiently. I mean, those guys had 6 carries, 32 yards, a little over five yards a carry from those guys. The second half was a little bit tougher going, for at least for Pacheco, 11 carries. He had 30 yards in the second half. So it did. I mean, was that to you? Was that just a little bit more of the Vikings making some adjustments, or the Chiefs maybe in some of the spots and how they chose to run the ball in the second half?
Well, the part of it is you just have to give your running backs time to get in a rhythm. And somebody like Pacheco, you got to get him 20, 25 carries a game to really kind of see him shine and get him in his style and rhythm, or give him a big explosive run like that counter run against the Jets last week to really kind of get him going. I don't think the Chiefs use the perimeter as much as I was expecting or anticipating them to, especially in short yardage. It felt like they kind of kept more inside the tackles or just right off the left tackle. So I thought there'd be more perimeter running, but they didn't elect to go down that road. And so I was a little surprised. There was a couple times I'm like, hey, maybe they do a toss there. And I'm like, no, they didn't do a toss there. And so they used little pieces of screens to hide. They hit some of their screens, which is kind of part of the run game of what they did, where they'd, you know, dump it off to McKinnon or kind of get Pacheco here and there and kind of use that as part of their perimeter running. So, but this week though, I mean, with the Broncos coming up, I'm just telling you, like, there's a lot of opportunity to run all over that defense. And this is a game, if the Chiefs really can physically muster what they need to, it could be a lot like a Chicago Bears game if they really want to push it to that level.
I'm going to need your eyes on when the coach's film comes out on that Jerick McKinnon run on third and short, because I'm 85% sure that was 65 toss power trap. Okay. The Chiefs ran there. So
I'll take a look, but I'm going to need your eyes.
But live, it looked an awful lot like it. So I'm definitely going to need your eyes on it. But you talk about the Broncos coming up, and that kind of takes me to my next one, which is the one thing we didn't necessarily learn about this team because we already knew it. Travis Kelce is a tough hombre. And he proved it again today, coming back in the second half and having a really strong second half after the ankle injury. But we know, you know, sometimes you get taped up, you can play through that in the second half, and then it's Monday morning that it really starts to hit. So we're not really going to have a good idea about Travis until probably, well, one, at least Tuesday, because the Chiefs will have an injury report on Monday, but it's only going to be an estimation. We won't see him on the field until Tuesday, and that's the only time before Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, the trainers, they've got their work cut out for him this week with him and pretty much everybody on the roster of trying to get them healthy, get them right, and get them through this game. But what each player has to try to remember, if they can, is, yes, do everything you can to physically get your body as good as you can. But remember, you're going to have a little extra break afterwards to really kind of rest up. And the other kicker of it is, while the Chiefs play on Thursday night, the Chargers are going to be playing on Monday night. So, like, there's an opportunity to have a handful of days ahead of the Chargers and really kind of get fresh again, you know, 7 games into the season, which is a rare opportunity. So, I mean, if the Chiefs can push through this week and come out with a comfortable win, it'll be a big payoff for them and physically and mentally to get a nice little break.
Switching over to the defensive side, another very strong outing from the Chiefs defense. I mean, only giving up 20 points to a fairly prolific offense, even though I think the Vikings came into this game, I think, averaging 22.5, so a little below their average. But as we've discussed, this was probably the most solid offensive performance that the Vikings have really had. I mean, you know, as far as just their productivity and protecting the football. One guy that Andy Reid singled out was L'Jarius Sneed on Justin Jefferson and the job he did, especially in the first half, because Jefferson really didn't play in the second half due to the hamstring injury. It's not very often that Andy Reid prompts, unprompted, gives props to a defensive guy like that.
Yeah, I hate to say it this way, but that was a huge contract game for L'Jarius Sneed going against the likes of Justin Jefferson. Like, that was a big money-making opportunity, and that's something. Because here's what people don't know. How many receiving yards did Justin Jefferson have total, Matt?
He had.
I already know the answer on this, but I just want you to be able to say it for me.
3 catches for 28 yards.
28 yards.
28 yards.
So for people that don't know,
best receiver in the NFL had 28 yards.
So for anybody that hasn't played against him in fantasy or doesn't have him on their fantasy team, Justin Jefferson had gone almost 150 in almost 3 of the other games, and then he had 80 in another one of the games. So this is the first time he's been held under 80 yards this season, and it's only the second time he's been held under 150 through 5 games. So what the Chiefs did against Justin Jefferson, That is insane. And I mean, and they did it multiple ways. They had Snead on him, Trent McDuffie's on him a couple times. And what the Vikings were doing a handful of times is they'd move into the slot position, because if Spagnuolo was going to blitz, they wanted to have him there as a creative outlet pretty quickly to be able to kind of utilize him. And then they also used him to try to get one of the touchdowns when they used him out of the backfield. And Osgood, if Cousins plays it right, Osgood has a touchdown, but it didn't work out that way. So in some ways, they had to use they knew they weren't going to get him open. So they were like, all right, we're going to have to use him as a decoy to try to get some of these other guys open. And that's why Addison had some of the catches he did. That's why Hawkinson got a couple, really not that much. The Chiefs did a really good job on him, too, compared to what I thought him and Jefferson might do. This, to me, was one of the Chiefs' best games collectively as a secondary. And so, like, in doing that and shutting those guys down, I think they had to sacrifice some of the blitzes that they wanted to, and some of the pass rush that they typically would want to, simply to win the war. They were okay with losing the battle play by play, but they wanted to win the war, and taking Hawkinson and Jefferson away and forcing Cousins to adapt based off that was crucial. And when the Chiefs did pick some of their blitzes, they were in spots, especially after Jefferson left the game because of the hamstring, they picked some spots where Cousins would have to decide quickly, and they knew it was going to be wrong, no matter what he decided. And then there's a couple other times where, you know, he tossed it up and Snead had an issue on one of them. And I know Trent McDuffie had an issue on one of them with either holding PI, everything. So all that collectively combined, this, I know it may not seem like it, but this is one of the best games the Chiefs secondary has played, and should give them a ton of confidence when they're going against a team like the Bills or Bengals that can match up, or even the Chargers in a couple of weeks, who athletically can all kind of match up at that same level.
Yeah, when you're talking about holding Jefferson and Hawkinson together, 8 catches for 79 yards, I mean, sometimes both those guys can go for that number by themselves.
Right.
Like you said, I mean, Jefferson can double that.
Right.
Doing that, I mean, you know, if that's the case, you're going to let Jordan Addison, you're going to let Addison get his 6 catches for 64. I mean, that's, you're fine with that. And I mean, Kirk Cousins, 47 attempts, 284 yards. I mean, they really held that Minnesota passing game in check. And that has been that is what the Vikings do. I mean, they are one of the better passing attacks in this league.
Yeah. Yeah. They're usually one of the top 10. I can't remember rankings wise. I think they're at 8, maybe, not 100% sure, but all that collectively. Yeah. The Vikings were going to be a good test for the Chiefs pass defense and what they can and can't do. And I thought the Chiefs pass defense came away a lot better than I think people realize. And here's the other kicker. The guy that they really need now on this pass rush to really, I think, kind of take him to the level they want to attacking-wise in their front four is when they get Charles Omenihu back after the Broncos game. Like, when he comes back from suspension and he gets to get in the facility, hopefully he gets some reps against the Chargers, but then get even more reps in that second Broncos game. And then after that, you know, I think they have the Dolphins at that point. So, I mean, to get Omenihu going, especially after that Chargers game, and kind of hopefully have him and a full complement pass rush ready to go for that stretch with the Dolphins, Eagles, and so on, when the Chiefs really get into the heart of who they're going to end up going against, like that's the next key, and that's the next hurdle. But, there's some stuff's going to happen along the way, obviously.
Well, and one, I mean, obviously, you know, you need to be able to keep guys healthy. But when you think about what this game means going forward, and you're not only talking about getting Charles Omenihu back from suspension after Thursday night, but you might get Nick Bolton back Thursday night. And if not, certainly he'll be back the same week that Charles Omenihu would be back. And you think week 7 for sure, the latest. But the fact that Chiefs were able to play this well without Nick Bolton the last 3 games, with the job that Drew Tranquil has done, and that the linebacker group too. I mean, I give them a lot of credit for what they were able to do against Hawkinson because the running backs. Because they were definitely, that was their responsibility today. And, you know, Leo Chanel obviously had a nice sack, but Willie Gay had a couple of plays in coverage, you know, and Tranquil was at least in the shot on some of the incompletions to Hawkinson. I mean, they all did their job. But now you're talking about getting Nick Bolton back. That adds to your depth. And Minshew too, with, you know, because the Chiefs have not really gone very deep on that defensive line, especially the edge. So Karloftis and Dana have been playing a lot of snaps. Minshew should be able to help lengthen that bench and give those guys a little bit of a breather after he returns.
Yeah, and then it allows them, on top of it, it allows them to kick Mike Dana inside with Chris Jones on some obvious third downs and leave Minshew and Karloftis outside, or bring Felix in and have Felix and Minshew and Chris Jones and Karloftis, or rotate however they see fit. And I'm just saying there's going to be a lot of options and a lot of opportunity. And then at some point, if the Keandre Coburn, if they're able, because I'm kind of curious to see where he's going to be kind of week eight and on, where he's going to be at in this defense and athletically, if he can help him pass rush wise, because that guy can pass rush better than people realize. And he's a very quick guy too. So, I mean, they have a lot of pass rushing options at the defensive line that I'm really excited and encouraged about. And I don't know this to be fact, but I'm just going to say this. With Nick Bolton, part of me wonders if they made a decision. Do we want him healthy for a Broncos game? Or do we want him, you know, less than 100% in a Vikings game, when we've already kind of, we can do what we've done with Drew Tranquil and that collective group? And if I'm in their shoes, I'd rather give him a couple extra days than that. Just like with Kelsey, I'm okay if Kelsey doesn't play much, if at all, on Thursday night. If you got to put him in for a little bit and he can do it, that's cool, because then he'll get the 10 days to rest, and Mahomes will get the 10 days to rest after that with his slight ankle sprain that it looked like, or agitation, whatever it was there for a minute. So it's basically just coming out with a win on Thursday and then just getting across that finish line so that you can get that 10 days rest and kind of get back into the stretch for a little bit and kind of get yourself ready and right for a couple of weeks down the road when you go against the Dolphins. And then after the Dolphins, you get a bye week. So then you get that rest, and then you can get ready for the Eagles. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, the Chiefs, I know this sounds weird to say, but the way the schedule worked out, I feel like it's given them proper tune-ups and spots to really kind of hit their stride for when they're going to face the Dolphins, the Eagles, the Bengals, and Bills of the world.
Yeah, the mini bye is coming at a pretty, pretty opportune time, because they've got some of their big names who could definitely use a couple of extra days of rest. And I mean, Thursday night games let's be real, Nick. They're terrible. They're always awful games, because we never know what's going to happen. You know, this game on paper between the Chiefs and the Broncos are an utter dumpster fire in progress. I mean, the Chiefs opened as a 10.5 point favorite, and I feel like that's a generous Thursday night line, assuming that things are going to be goofy on a Thursday night, because the Chiefs are probably about 40 points better than the Broncos right now, especially after you look at like what the Dolphins do to them. I mean, these two teams are just on different planets right now, but it's Thursday night. You never know what can happen in a game like this, but I do think that the Chiefs should beat the Broncos, and they can do it without Travis Kelce. So if he doesn't play Thursday night, that would not be the worst thing in the world in my mind.
Yeah, and then it gives them time, and this is where the Chiefs can do it. Unfortunately, he had a handful of drops. Well, the Justin Ross fan club, you know, that was big on him. And, I mean, look, he had a great catch. He had a good leaping catch, but then they tried to get him a couple more opportunities, and he unfortunately dropped a couple of those. So he only had the one catch at that point. But they may be able to create a package where he kind of takes some of that red zone work that Kelce would have had on maybe a fade route, or, you know, kind of some of that bunch work or something of that nature, and kind of use his athletic ability. So, I mean, the Chiefs now have a couple of days to plan. Okay, we're going to use Justin Ross in some of those spots in that, or we may use Noah Gray or whatever they end up doing. But they've got some more opportunities if they want it to really kind of stretch out, especially against this Broncos team, too. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what effort – if the Chiefs can get physical early, run the ball, and do what they need to and kind of lean on the Broncos, I just feel like that football team is going to quit a lot sooner than they would have earlier in their year when they still had hope. Because watching them today against the Jets, that's a football team that doesn't necessarily have a lot of hope left in them.
No, and it seems to be draining week by week. And when the Jets and their social media team is clowning you, that's you've hit rock bottom. But And I, you know what, I do want to circle back on Justin Ross real quick, because he's a guy that I feel like that the Chiefs have just haven't done the best job for, because he is, for all intents and purposes, a rookie. He is still learning a lot. And if you watched him like we did throughout training camp, I mean, you saw the highlight plays. They are there.
Yeah.
But you also saw why he is where he is in the depth chart. I mean, he's got a lot to learn. I mean, and, you know, and some of it's the same things that Rashee Rice is going through with the drops and learning things and getting used to the speed of the league and the physicality of it. You know, there's no doubt. I mean, Justin Ross has the tools to do it, but he's a project still. I mean, I feel like that, you know, the highlight reel plays that got put out of Justin Ross didn't really do him justice, because, you know, yes, it makes him look great, but he's not Odell Beckham Jr. in his prime yet. I mean, maybe he'll be that one day, but he's not there yet.
Right. No, I mean, you're 100% right. And that's what you and I and other media members have been trying to tell people for some time, is like, look, I mean, when the coaches have full trust that he can execute the entire playbook, they will put him out there. Coaches like receiving their checks. They like having stability. They like having health insurance, job security. They like trying to find opportunities to get promotions and advance their career. There's not a little scheme to hide players and not use them. They want to use everybody. Like Keandre Coburn, I know they want to get him up to speed by the end of the year so he could potentially be Derek Nnadi's replacement if he needs to be. But right now there's some growing pains that he's clearly got to go through, that they're going to work through. And, you know, that's why for rookies it takes to like week 8, 10 before you start kind of seeing who they are and who they'll be. And so for Justin Ross, I know people want him to get more – because here's what it comes down to at the end of the day. And Matt sent me on a little bit of a rant here. I thought about doing this on Twitter earlier this week, but I didn't. So basically, I understand a lot of people think that Justin Ross and Rashee Rice are what keep them from needing to go trade for somebody or look in free agency, that's the solution, and that you've got to unturn that stone. And once you unturn that stone, then, you know, then all is well, and the offense is firing on all cylinders. The reality of it is, at the end of the day, the Chiefs still lack speed at receiver that they're going to need long term. When this offense, for this, not just this year, for long term, they're going to have to go get that in the offseason. But then they're also going to have to get a guy who can get on the same page with Mahomes, run the ins and outs of the offense, and command the respect that defenses fear that guy is going to get on. I mean, you'd be like, oh, hey, that's what Tyreek Hill was. Yeah, you're right. So Tyreek Hill was, but you may not get that Super Bowl if Tyreek Hill is still here from last year, because a lot of those defensive players are stepping up to the plate, and a lot of them are helping turn this defense into what it is to give Mahomes some balance to it. But that's where the Chiefs, from a roster building perspective, that's where they may end up going long term, to where, hey, they go add to that skill set of receiver, tight end, maybe even at running back, and kind of pair that with what they've got along with what that defense is. So, I mean, it's just, they had to sacrifice some in receiver this year to be able to collectively do what they wanted to protection wise for Mahomes, and then also kind of the pass rush attack that they wanted to. So, I mean, I know it's a bummer and it's unfortunate in certain perspectives, and everybody wants to see that 2018 offense all over again and everything, but you're going to need a lot more speed of receiver if you're going to make that happen.
And, you know, and honestly, I mean, Patrick Mahomes after the game today really kind of gave away the game. I mean, in explaining it just like that, I mean, especially with this receiving group, is that their expectation is that they're going to be a lot better by the end of the year than they are right now. But that they always knew all along that this is where they were going to be. There's no surprise. And, you know, and I asked Andy Reid this a couple of weeks ago, you know, if, you know, really, if it was a little bit like, you know, with the offense and Steve Spagnuolo with the defense, and saying sometimes he doesn't know what he has. And Andy just kind of gave me one of those looks, you know, that little smile to just, but he was saying, no, I know what we got. We're fine. Don't worry. Because he fully believes that, you know, that these guys are going to learn, they're going to pick some things up, and they're going to be able to take advantage of some of the skill sets that they've got. But like you said, I mean, it's a work in progress for the future, for sure, because the 2023 receiver group will not be the same group as it will be in 2024.
Right. And so that's, you know, I mean, if Kelce got seriously hurt today, and thankfully he did not, But if Kelce gets seriously hurt, then yeah, they were probably going to need to make a move at that point. They're going to have to go do something. They're going to have to mortgage a little bit of their future, maybe a lot of their future, to go get a player that could kind of impact in the way that they needed at that point. Thankfully, as of now, it isn't that case. But yeah, I mean, look, I mean, this season offensively is kind of a reality check that they're going to have to continue to invest in spots and continually turn it over and kind of keep adding at those on a yearly basis at receiver, maybe at tight end, on top of, you know, adding on the O-line and D-line and wherever else they need to. So, yeah, I think for a while it's going to be a struggle for them, but they're going to keep learning each week, just like they did against the Vikings this week, just like they did against the Jets last week. And it's like the Chiefs secondary last year. They had a lot of growing pains that they went through, but when it mattered down that stretch there in December and January, a lot of those young guys really shined and kind of stepped up to the plate. And I think the Chiefs are kind of expecting something similar with the wide receiver group and also kind of the tight ends who they're going to need to lean on more than normal.
Well, if you're a Chiefs fan, you really can't complain about where Kansas City stands after 5 weeks. They are 4-1. They are first place in the AFC West. They have the holding number, what would be the number one seed in the AFC. So right now the road goes through Arrowhead once again.
And that one loss involves not having Chris Jones and Travis Kelce on the field for it.
To a team that is 4-1.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the Lions are looking for real. So that loss is looking better and better each and every week.
Right. So, I mean, if you remember the circumstances, Kelce or Jones turned that tide to where the Chiefs are 5-0 right now. And you're not going to be able to tell me any different. But I will say the Chiefs benefited from some penalties today down the stretch that weren't called, and that helped them in some spots. So, you know, I would like to pretend it even itself out. Maybe it didn't. But if I was an opposing fan, I obviously would have been a little frustrated with a couple no calls that happened today. But then there was a couple calls that the Vikings got that I didn't agree with either. But hate to say it, that's NFL officiating anymore. That's just the way it's going to be.
That is absolutely the way it's going to be. And today we even got Andy Reid commenting the officials for picking up the flag on LeJarius Sneed. So he thought it was the right call, which leads me to believe that he probably knows it could have gone either way, but better off. Hey, if he can give the officials a compliment right now, he can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Give him that win right now. They need it.
Give him some love.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to put this one to bed. We appreciate you once again for listening in on 41 is the Mic. Like us, promote us, do whatever you can. We appreciate all the support out there. Give us a review. Tell us what you're thinking. I forgot what it was. I was asking people last week about their, and I forgot to go back and look and see if anybody actually told us who was their favorite Robin Lively-esque actor that they want to meet. So, and want to see, hang out with in a suite. So,
I know
if you still have that.
We still got some people that responded and were very hurtful about Robin Lively. It was very, very disappointed.
I was hurt by the number of people. I was hurt by the number of people who don't remember Robin Lively.
Yeah, it's very disappointing, very frustrating. I mean,
but that's okay. We still love you all. And we will be back in just a few days. We will be back probably Friday morning. We'll see how the schedule goes, but we'll be back either late Thursday, probably. So definitely with the schedule, it'll be sometime Friday. But we'll be with you as early as we can, breaking down the Broncos and Chiefs and Thursday night after that. Nick, any parting thoughts? Anything you want to share?
As always, I bid you adieu.
That says it all for me. Thanks, everybody, for catching us and downloading us. We appreciate you, and we will catch you next time.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.